on Bad Takes in Boston, Season 2, Headlines from Training Camp, Top 5 Rookies, and Baseball.
Well, Jack, we got football to talk about. It's back. It's back.
We're back. We're back. Mystery drops in the middle of the night. You know, no one knew we were coming. We didn't really announce it. No one was walking around this August weekend thinking, oh, new BTB for the middle of training camp. But here we are. We're ready to go. I'm ready to be here. I know you're ready to be here. This is awesome.
Let's rock, Jack. Let's get into this. So first off, I feel like it's worth mentioning the Hall of Fame game before we get into training camp, because I don't know about you, but I bet you saw Trey Lance, you know, put on a show. And I think we all forget that he is only 25 years old. The amount of times that I heard Chris Collinsworth say that on the broadcast, and he's only 25 years old. He's only 25 years old. Every time he dropped back to pass, Jim Harbaugh loves this kid. He's only 25 years old. In my head, I'm like, all right, dude, we get it. It's the same thing when they were talking about Gleyber Torres and Juan Soto when they're in the World Series, and they kept mentioning how they're like 20 years old the whole time. But it's Trey Lance. He was a former Cowboy. I was a little interested on that. Excited to see what he was able to do. And I don't know, Jack. I'm just curious to see. Do you think maybe Jim Harbaugh resurrects his career a little bit?
Jim Harbaugh has got the best chance of resurrecting it out of anybody, because he put him in a system where subpar quarterbacks can thrive. Colin Kaepernick was a great college QB and had good times, good games in the NFL, but he was a substandard quarterback altogether. Jim Harbaugh resurrected his career. He made J.J. McCarthy look like an almost Heisman winner at Michigan. I truly think that Trey Lance looked the best he could. I don't think he's good. I don't think his age matters. This is a little foreshadowing, I think, of later in the video. But, you know, when people talk about a guy's age, it often is a real deflection for how they're playing right now, because it doesn't matter like that much. Like, I understand for their long-term development, but, like, you know, if you take a guy like Anthony Volpe, who is, I believe, like 22, right? He is getting, and you mentioned him in any social media setting whatsoever right now, outside of like very specific Yankee people who will like defend him, like, and they'll always bring up his age. It's his play on the field that matters. And Trey Lance was a third overall pick, and he has been awful. He has been terrible. And he was against a bunch of Lions backup guys who are mostly undrafted, who are not going to probably ever see much NFL games, if we're being honest. I'm sorry. I'm going to be more of a hater, even though I'm a big Harbaugh guy, a big Chargers guy. You know what? I hope it works out. I'd rather be successful than not. He's not in my division. He doesn't play the Giants. But, you know, I think it's just like we're in bust territory. We're in bust. You go to the Niners, you're not playing. You get excited when he's on the Cowboys and he doesn't play. And now we're here playing in the Hall of Fame game with DJU backing you up. You know, like, it's just the time has passed.
No, I agree. I think also, too, our listeners are going to love that we started, season 2 talking about Trey Lance, of all people. But it seems fitting. It seems fitting that Trey Lance is mentioned on the pod. So let's talk training camp. I know you.
Did anything interesting happen in training camp yet, Tomas?
All right, listen. I know Micah Parsons requested a trade, but for me personally, he's going to get signed. He's going to make a lot of money. Jerry Jones is going to whip out the checkbook, and he's going to be a Cowboy. I'm so confident in that I'm not even reading too much into it. How many stars have we seen do this? We saw this last year with Myles Garrett, and Myles Garrett didn't get traded and signed his extension. We see this all the time. We're going to see it right now. We saw it with like Brandon Ayuk. We saw it with CeeDee Lamb. I mean, the Cowboys are notorious for doing stuff like this. It's a joke of an organization. Jerry Jones, I hate you. Stephen Jones, I hate you too. And you know what? It's just all downhill, man. It doesn't matter what we do, because the Jones family is going to continue running this organization until I'm dead in a grave and I'm never going to see anything differently. And we're just one big joke. And that's how I feel about it. It's just, I don't understand how you have a talent like Micah Parsons, who basically said, I was not trying to get, you know, set the bank or, you know, reset the market at the position. He goes, I just wanted to get paid. Like, I think I deserve to get paid. And he won an extension like 2 years ago. He was like, let's get this done early. I want to be a Cowboy for life. And they're like, no. And what made me the most upset is they've re-signed Jake Ferguson to like a 4-year, $55 million deal, something like that. And he caught, oh, wait, yeah, zero touchdowns last year. Congratulations. Why did we just do that? Why did we sign that guy to the extension? And Micah Parsons is not a priority? Like, it blows my mind. I just don't get it. It's like almost like I feel like they're doing it on purpose. It's like, are they trying to just be dumb? Are they aware that the way they handle the football aspect of the organization is just blatantly wrong? I don't know, Jack.
You got to think of it from the perspective of some people get rich because they invent a product that really benefits humanity. And some people get rich because their dad went to a random part of Texas, drilled into the ground and found a bunch of oil and natural gas, and now their great grandkids and kids will be rich for generations to come and no one's got to worry about it. And that's the Joneses. You're exactly right. The people who are making these decisions are not the smartest people available. Excuse me for one second. Yep, apologies for that. The people who are making these decisions are not the smartest people available in the slightest. I do not understand. I was listening to one of our older episodes a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember which one. I think it might have been around week 14, week 13 of the season. And I brought up how we were going to be in for a massive contract fight with Micah Parsons for no other reason than one, he's very good and clearly has some allegiances with other teams. He was rooting for the Eagles pretty hard in the Super Bowl. You could tell, that's just when he's mentioning his trade thing on his notes app, first thing he mentions he's from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He
You also
doesn't.
forget the Steelers, though. The Steelers are also in Pennsylvania. He said if he played for anyone else, he'd want to play for Pittsburgh.
I understand that. I guess what I'm thinking is, oh wow. Marlins up 3-1. Yankees are terrible. We'll talk about that later. I truly don't think he's gonna I can't think he's gonna stay. I think it would be insane for him to stay at this point after this massive show of all this. Some people sit out, other people write essays on their notes app and post it. It's very much like high school dating. Where if someone does that, if your girl you're dating at the time is post something to that effect and would be like, see, and then a couple days later them and that person get back together and it's like your buddy's girlfriend, you're like, ooh, that's kind of weird. We all kind of saw that happen in public. It's like awkward. I truly think that he should be a priority. He's one of the best defensive players in the league. I've maintained, and I would have maintained as of last year, although he was hurt a little bit, that going into last year, I was of the impression that he was. Him and Aiden Hutchinson were the two best defensive players in the NFL. And I don't know why the Cowboys don't value that. I don't know why it can't be name your price. If Dak Prescott could be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, then why can't Micah Parsons be the top paid defensive player? Genuinely, we make fun of the teams like the Bengals for how they structure their teams around a Joe Burrow and a Ja'Marr Chase and everything falls apart. But at least with the Cowboys, you're like, and granted, if I was the GM, I wouldn't give Dak that much money, but it's just what it was. You get your quarterback paid and you get your best defensive player paid, and theoretically that can win you Super Bowl. Teams have won with less, and it bothers me that this is not prioritized. I'm sorry. I think he's going to go. I think you'll get something good for him unless they just butcher it and overpay for trades like they kind of sometimes will do. But yeah, dude, this is done. I hope that AFC, don't do what we did. Don't let him go to the Eagles. It can't happen. But you know how bad our lives would be if he went to the Eagles?
It'd almost be really fitting if he did go to like Philly, or he went to a team that was going to play Dallas twice a year. The Commanders, I mean, Dan Quinn is their head coach. We know how much Micah Parsons loves Dan Quinn. I don't think that's crazy to, you know, I just don't think, I just don't think, I think it'd be crazy for Jerry to trade him inside the division. Like, that's just, that would blow my mind of just saying, yeah, you know what? I don't think you're that good. Or, hey, I'm going to let you come back and play us twice a year and potentially keep us out of the playoffs. But at the same time, Micah Parsons is a great player. He is definitely one of the better defensive players in the entire league. But as someone who watches the Dallas Cowboys religiously, he is a guy that makes plays and changes the game when it doesn't matter. Literally look at the playoffs, for example. He disappears in the playoffs. He is does n nothing. He's literally done nothing in the playoffs. All these crazy highlight plays, if you put it on, even like some of the touchdowns he scored, it's like against like the Bears, the Giants, the Commanders when they were not good. Just very inept teams where it's like, okay, he had three sacks. Yeah, he was going against, 38-year-old whatever left tackle that's playing for whatever team.
It's
It's just
older.
stuff like
The
that.
point
It's
is,
just
it's older.
And that's what I'm saying. It's just like he's going against guys that he should beat, and he's a great player. Don't get me wrong, but for me, I'm like, this is ridiculous. I told you last year. I remember we had this conversation. Him doing his podcast, I don't believe in that. Play football. Do not do podcasts during the year. Why do you need to do that? It's okay if you want to have a podcast, whatever.
That would seem to be counterproductive if you were saying we couldn't have a podcast, because we have a very successful independent podcast.
But not during a season, you know what I mean? It doesn't make sense why he's talking, it's week 5 and he's talking about the game they just had against the Jets or whatever. It's like, why are you talking about that? Get ready for week 6. You just lost and you're talking about video games or something. No one wants to hear that. I feel like that's a distraction. And that was a key thing. I mean, they talked about it that when he had a meeting with Jerry Jones where this whole contract dispute thing started. Jerry basically was like, hey, I need you to be a leader. I need you to kind of made chill with this podcast stuff because apparently it was rubbing guys in the locker room the wrong way. And if that's the case, you got to stop doing that. And I think those podcast type of players, I mean, here's a great one for you. Paul George. Paul George, ever since he started his podcast, has been laughable at basketball. They haven't won. The Sixers suck. And that's just one example. I'm not saying, you can't have a podcast, but it's just like, stop. You're in season. Focus on what you're paid to do. You're a professional athlete, right? Focus on the field, focus on the court, whatever. And I just think Micah Parsons he's just a little different, and he's a great player. But if we lose him, honestly, it's whatever. I just hope we get a good return. Truthfully, I think he's gonna stay. But if it's a butcher a trade and we don't get like 2 first-round picks for him or something, I'm gonna lose my mind.
And we do got to talk about other stuff, so it's tough to get bogged down in this, but this man's got 52 tackles in 4 years of play. He's gone over at least 12 sacks every single year for you guys. Like
Yeah.
that's impossible to replace.
And
Impossible.
I agree. I agree, but this is way too much, man. This is just too much. I'm honestly done talking about it. I know we got other stuff we got to get into. I know you want to talk about the New York Football Giants because you know what? I kind of do too, because Malik Nabers, I don't think we're even remotely prepared for what that guy is going to do this year with a quarterback, mind you, it's old Russell Wilson, but man, anything's got to be better than what they've had last year. And Malik Nabers was still a top 5 receiver in the league.
Russell Wilson is hitting him in stride. These clips coming out of training camp are insane right now. The
Beautiful.
Giants are like playing in such a way that I actually am so incredibly excited for like the first time in a long time about like a Giants like team coming up right now. The first off, random stuff. Evan Neal might start at guard. Evan
I heard
Neal
he's been playing good, right?
has been playing insanely good. BTB's contributing reporter Thomas Decker went to East Rutherford the other day, gave me a whole rundown, said he saw Elijah Chapman at fullback, says he saw Evan Neal absolutely murdering dudes. The problem might also be that our defensive line room or defensive tackle room outside of Dexter Lawrence is terrible, just like really bad. Our third round pick has kind of been lacking, but hopefully he could step up soon. Scat Pack has been incredible. We'll talk about that in a bit. Abdul Carter is wrecking fools in a way that, like, he is a Sith Lord. He is Darth Vader. He is going to. I think the line right now is 8 sacks for him on the year. That's going to be the first BTB book it for me. We're not in a book it section, and maybe I save that for a couple weeks before the season actually starts. But we are going to get an in-depth review about why we should all go to the bank, take out the biggest loan possible, and put it on Abdul Carter sacks, because I couldn't be more excited for this. This defensive line, they just got a nickname. You know what their nickname is?
What is it?
Rush Hour.
Man, that's kind of cool.
It's
I hate
so
that.
cool.
I hate that. That's cool.
It's so cool. This is going to be the year that, listen, got a tough schedule. I'll tell you what, though. I'll tell you what. One of those wins is going to come against the Dallas Cowboys.
No,
One
you're
of those wins
not.
is going to come against you are this is a new
Not.
organization. This is a new team. This isn't Daniel Jones throwing to Darius Slayton anymore. This is Russell Wilson throwing to Malik Nabers with Scat Pack throwing it in the end zone, trucking Mazi Smith and Abdul Carter making Tyler Booker look like he plays for Juniata College. I'm telling you, it's going to be good. It's going to happen. Couldn't be more excited for it. Are there some lingering issues I worry about? Yes, the secondary. Yes, parts of our defensive line, interestingly enough. And Evan Neal at guard, I'm still not sold on it, but could be good. Could be exciting. Jackson Dart also. He's looked like a rookie. He's had some bad throws. He's had some very good throws. His arm, I like the way he throws the ball. I like the way he throws the deep ball. He throws a good deep ball. He hits dudes in stride. That's one of his best qualities. Some of his decision making, he's coming out of the Lane Kiffin goofball offense, where I probably could have thrown for like at least 1,300 yards, but I'm feeling okay about it. But that's
I did want to ask you a question. Do
yes,
you
yes.
think I saw this on Twitter and I it brought up a good point because we see all the clips of Malik Nabers just dusting, dude, scoring touchdowns left and right, all that good stuff, right? And do you think Malik Nabers is just that good, or is the Giants secondary potentially that bad?
So it's interesting because this is we're going into Deontay Banks's third year, and he's obviously been at best okay in certain games, and at worst like a very bad corner in the NFL and a straight up liability on the team. A lot of people were shocked because Cordell Flott, I know you remember Cordell Flott, my boy, who if early viewers will remember. This guy was pretty interesting because he was one of, in terms of analytics, a top five corner in the NFL for man coverage, but a bottom like 70 corner in the NFL for zone. I don't know what that means. He's one of the youngest guys in the NFL. He was the youngest player drafted the year he was drafted. He was on that 2019 LSU team, interestingly enough. I think Cordell Flott's going to start. I think Deontay Banks is going to get some playing time, but a lot of the clips are specifically against Banks and Flott. I think Banks is done. He has no ball skills. He's like decently okay at coverage, but then when it comes to like actually like one-on-oneing the guy and I playing on the ball, he's horrific. He's a straight up liability. So Malik Nabers is actually that good. Don't get me wrong. That clip of him stumbling and falling but catching the ball, and those clips of him just like dusting fools because like that's his game. His footwork is fantastic, and he's got like elite speed, so he can just get people behind him. But I think our corners are going to be probably our worst part of our team because he's also dusting like Paulson Adebo too and Javon Holland. But those are like a minority of the reps. So to answer your question, it's kind of both. I lean more towards hopefully it's just being Malik Nabers being good.
Now let's talk about another team, the Browns.
Oh yeah.
They got four quarterbacks. Someone's going to start week one. What do you think? What are your thoughts? I'm very curious to what you think they're going to do because you know how I have my opinions, and it's
Yeah.
also the Browns. But what really? What do you think? What do you think?
Hey, crap. I'm terrible at this. Your buddy's name, who's the Browns fan?
Mason.
Mason. Hey, Mason. It's Jack again. I'm sorry I keep forgetting your name. I hope you remember mine. I previously had told Mason over the air that this draft class was bad. And I heard there was disagreement, and that's fine. I would just like to say that this is a completely inept run organization. Andrew Berry might be one of the worst GMs I've ever seen do it. I don't know why he particularly bothers me so much with his decision making, but the multiple quarterbacks taken when he didn't need to, the Shadur in the fifth round, the Dylan Gabriel, also picking up Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco, and getting Quinshon Judkins while Jadeveon Henderson was on the board, who, and now for a second year in a row, one of the guys you pick up has a domestic violence charge, which
Also,
like
even better, he's not under contract. He hasn't signed a contract yet. So I don't even know
he's
what's going
missing on a
to
second
happen.
round pick. It's not like I'm saying it's not for sure, but like that could totally happen. I think the way they evaluate players is like awful. I think the fact that they traded away Travis Hunter for more picks with this inept organization is awful. And I know I'm really not answering your question because you asked specifically about the quarterbacks. I was thinking about it. In my prediction, I think Dylan Gabriel is going to do well in these preseason games. I think he's going to like do well, run around, throw some short passes, get some like okay yards, maybe lead like a comeback in a game, and he's going to be the one they trade for like I don't know, maybe like a third round pick if he looks really good or something similar to like what Joe Milton got the Patriots. I know a lot of people are saying it's Kenny Pickett, and that makes sense. And this is more of a belief that Dylan Gabriel could look good against like NFL backups. But I think he does. I think he does look good. So that's my thoughts. What are you feeling, Tomas?
Part of me thinks that Kenny Pickett's not even going to play a game for the Browns, and I think Joe Flacco is going to roll out there week one. I
Joe
really,
Flacco is the team's quarterback. He has to be.
I think Joe Flacco is going to roll out there week one, and by week six, Dylan Gabriel is going to start, and by week 15, 14, Shadur is going to start the last four games because they're going to be like 3-12. And they're going, well, Dylan Gabriel's not the answer. We suck. Might as well let Shadur get a crack at this. And yeah, I think we live in a world where Shadur Sanders is going to take valuable snaps for the Browns this year. I think a lot of it does depend on preseason because let's say they go out there for these preseason games and Shadur just outplays Dylan Gabriel. The national media is going to talk. People are going to be talking and they're going to want to see Shadur be the starter. Mind you, we don't know what goes on, on the day-to-day basis, but everything that I've read in camp is saying that Shadur's, showing up to practice early, he's staying late, he's trying to get better. I mean, he is really, I've liked the way that he's handled everything since being drafted. Just even in his press conferences, when he gets a chance to talk to the media, I like what I'm hearing. It's a very different than what we saw, I think, at the combine and draft interviews and just the kind of facade that he would put out there. I think he kind of humbled himself a little bit. And, being the four string quarterback, being stuck on the back practice field, just doing walkthroughs while everyone else is doing team drills, I think it kind of, I wouldn't say takes a toll on him, but he kind of sit there and was like, yeah, man, I do need to take a step back and understand this is the NFL. I want him to succeed so bad. Perfect timing. I'm showing up to watch right now. Like, I want Shadur Sanders to be so good, so bad. Not only because I've been so high on him for so long, but also for my dynasty fantasy football team, I just made a trade for him and I would really like for him to be good. So give me Shadur, give me the Browns. I think it's Joe Flacco to start, but I think we're going to see maybe they keep all four quarterbacks and all four of them play throughout the whole year. I could so see that happening because you know what? It's the Browns.
Yeah, you know, you're 100% right about that. Shadur's mannerisms and general media presence, I don't know if they just got him like they might have gotten a media train too, along with a little bit of an ego death, because he's done everything exactly right. Him and Shiloh too. They're loving Shiloh in Tampa Bay right now. He's incredibly humble. Apparently he hasn't been killing it at practice, is what I'm hearing. He hasn't like exactly proven he's better than like Kenny Pickett or Dylan Gabriel, which like, I don't think is like a very high bar to do, but he needs time. I definitely thought he was a better quarterback prospect than Dylan Gabriel, and I think he has a much more potential at this point in the league than Kenny Pickett does. I just hope he figures it out and could be a good starting quarterback for a team someday, or maybe like an okay one. I think that's more realistic for his skill set. But yeah, we
I'm
got some other.
curious.
Oh
I'm
yeah,
curious to
what
see.
you say?
I'm just curious to see what happens with that. The Browns, I think, are going to be the worst team in football, but they also are the most intriguing team just for the four quarterbacks thing and two of them being rookies, and you have a 41-year-old Joe Flacco.
100%.
So it will be interesting to see. But you know what? Hey, it's Cleveland. Let's flip it over to our next segment. We're going to talk about our top five rookies, taking quarterbacks out of it. And hit me, Jack. I know who you got at the top of your list, so let's.
Yeah, the eventual rookie of the year. Or I guess they do it offensive and defensive now. I'm running the, yeah, okay, defensive rookie of the year. Or honestly, let's go all together with my ultimate like plus money prediction. The defensive player of the year is going to be Abdul-Jabbar Carter of the New York Giants. I know I talk about the Giants. I know I'm a Giants fan. I know I'm a little delusional, but guys, like if we're being like 100% right now with everything I'm seeing, this guy Against the Giants' offensive line, which granted is a limited sample size of mostly bad players, his highlights look similar to that of the Lawrence Taylor highlight tape on YouTube, where Stranglehold is playing. I know at least a couple listeners know exactly what I'm talking about. He is spin moving guys, rushing from the middle. He's rushing from the five spot into the zero and on like a stunt, and is spin moving the center into the point where he's sacking the quarterback or like hitting him and kind of like putting his hands up. And the center is like 20 feet away, stumbling. He is beating dudes in, he is an elite mover, and he is going to get 10 plus sacks this year. He is going, he is one of the best looking defensive rookies I think we will ever see in this game. And I am for certain, except for maybe one guy who I'll talk about later, that he will have the most lasting impact and most instantaneous important impact on their team of any rookie this year, Abdul Carter for the New York Giants.
I don't know why he wouldn't win Defensive Rookie of the Year at all. At all. I there's no reason in my mind that he shouldn't. You're right, Jack. Like, he should have double digit sacks. He should be Rookie of the Year, and there's an opportunity. What do you know what the rookie record is for sacks?
Let's look that up. I know the only rookie to ever win rookie defensive player of the year was Lawrence Taylor. Rookie sack record. Javon Kearse in 1999, he got 14 and a half. Gotta say it.
He could do it.
Don't know Javon Kearse off the top of my head. Played for the Titans, nicknamed the Freak.
Oh, so that, I mean, I don't know. I think Abdul Carr could get 14 and a half sacks.
Because this is the situation. Imagine you're the Eagles offensive coordinator and you have one of the greatest O-lines ever, right? Granted, Mekhi Becton's gone, so you got a new guard in. I don't know how good he's going to be. Let's say even he's a little bit worse than Mekhi Becton. With Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeaux, and Abdul Carter, who are you double teaming and who are you leaving on an island?
Yeah, no, you're right. I don't know.
If you're not dumb, the answer ideally should be you double team Dexter, so you don't just get rushed up the middle. And then you got Thibodeaux on an island. Maybe he does something. Probably not. Brian Burns being like fast as hell, definitely causing an impact. And then what do? You stunt Abdul Carter in the middle. No one's stopping that.
Yeah.
No one's stopping that. Like even like some of the really good interior offensive lines in football are just failing to pick that up. And that gets me going. That gets me excited. I
So,
do think. Yeah, you were saying.
oh
Yeah.
no, I agree with that completely. I think for my number one, since you hit your number one, it's Travis Hunter. And I know I've harped on this before. Anyone that's listened to the pod or has had a conversation with me understands that I think Travis Hunter has the potential to be something we've never seen before on a football field if he can actually go two ways. I think he needs to work on his route running ability, but him with the ball in his hands, his just go up and get it mentality is better than most. I mean, he's winning jump balls as a DB because he's a receiver. He knows how to beat cornerbacks because he is a cornerback. It's so cool to see him flip between those two positions. And I think the Jaguars are all for it. And I think they're one of the few teams I was like, yeah, we're going to take the Heisman Trophy winner, and he's going to play both ways. I don't know how many snaps, but it could be interesting to see because in my head I'm like, he's got to play at least. I think he's going to play defense majority of the time. But if I had to think of like minutes on the field, I would think he's playing at least a half of football on offense as well. You know what I'm saying? Like, he might not be in their area of possession, but I would think if you get what, let's just say how many possessions a game? 8, 9, 10 possessions, he's on offense for half of them, I think.
Yeah, I'm a slightly more pessimistic about how often I think they're going to use him on offense, just because I think they're going to worry about like overwhelming him and potentially injuring him. Because like you can only imagine like the physical toll that takes on your body as a college player going up against Nebraska, but like being a rookie and then going into the NFL and like experiencing like physical toll that'll take on your body. And then some games you got like 3 days rest because we gotta get Thursday night football on Amazon Prime. You know, like it I would, if I was his coach, I'd put him in like 25% of the times. You
Or when it
know,
matters, red zone. I think he's good big time in the red
red
zone.
zone 2 minute drill, I'd put him in.
Yeah.
And maybe like just to see him in like certain plays, maybe do some trick stuff with him. I would totally do that. But I'd draft him and think like, okay, we got a really good corner who's got excellent ball skills and maybe like a fun gadget on offense. I wouldn't think of him as like a receiver as well. But that being said, like I think if anyone, if the biggest threat to Abdul Carter's defensive rookie of the year is this guy. You know, if he gets like, you know, something crazy like five picks for a rookie, that'd be pretty nuts. And then you pair that with like the fact that he might get like, I don't know, like 350 like receiving yards, like that's one of the most productive rookie seasons ever. You know, I know, I think those are relatively conservative numbers for him. You know, like that could be a real threat. I have him as my second rookie as well. Not my number one because I love my boy Abdul Jabbar, but he's definitely up there for me as well.
So he's number two for you. Two for me is Tet McMillan. I am so excited. Eventually we're gonna have an episode where we're gonna really break down some of these teams, but I am so excited for the Carolina Panthers. I'm gonna let you know right now, that is my favorite team to talk about, to read on, because I think they are gonna take a huge leap this year. I am so confident in that too, Jack. I'm all about the Carolina Panthers. Bang the drum, keep pounding. I'm so excited to watch Bryce Young this year. I just don't see a world where he doesn't continue that little run he was on last year to start the year. And I think they got something up their sleeve, man. They have some really talented players. They're a young team, and I believe, man. I believe in the Carolina Panthers. Tet McMillan, he's going to be an absolute stud at that X position. I know the whole thing was cool with Xavier Leggett and like, he was from South Carolina and he talked funny, and they were like, oh, this guy's going to be a receiver. But no, he kind of sucks. I think the Panthers realized that he is not at that level to be a wide receiver one, even a wide receiver two in the league yet. Maybe he will. I just don't think so. But having a true go up and get it X receiver type guy, I compare him to Dez Bryant. I think he's going to be that freaking good. Mind you, he is on my dynasty football team, but I don't really care because I think he has the potential to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. I know everyone's gonna say Ashton Jeanty. I'm like, duh, yeah, I get it, but I don't think people really understand that Tet McMillan can easily, in my opinion, replicate what Malik Nabers did statistically last year. I 100% think that. While probably I would say staying healthy just because he's a different type of receiver than Nabers is, but I love Tet McMillan.
I think he could be pretty solid. I you know, it's hard to tell. Like, this is going to sound like I think some Panthers fans are going to disagree with me on this, and this might bring up some bad things for some of our listeners. But I think he was like a more refined, better ball skills version of like Keon Coleman from the last year's draft, where he had like good go up and get it ability. His ball skills were, I mean, I obviously think Tet McMillan was a better prospect than Keon Coleman, but their skill sets were very similar. It was jump up and get it. You're not really going to win anything with like your route rushing ability or your like speed necessarily. And for NFL players, that's not necessarily like a bad thing to have. And I don't think Tet McMillan's going to be bad in the league. I just don't know how much that necessarily translates as a rookie. And I am not sold on the Panthers either. Even like, their offense, I think, could be pretty good. I'm starting to eat crow on the Bryce Young takes I've had, where I've called him like terrible and one of the biggest busts ever. But their defense is still like dog water. I know this isn't like a Carolina Panthers team preview, but like their defense is going to be like a tough one to watch. Those Panthers overs are going to hit like nothing. There's going to be a surplus in the economy with the Panthers overs we're going to be betting. You know, I just honestly think like I think he'll be good. I think he'll probably be like one of the better rookie offensive players, but like not in a way that makes him like a very good player in the league right now.
Okay, that's fair. I get where you're coming from. I think it really all just depends on Bryce Young, and if he takes that leap that we expect him to, because I think he will. I just also think we forget about the run game. They have Chuba Hubbard. They do have Rico Dowdle, which I think is funny. They have some playmakers. They do have some weapons. Shout out Adam Thielen. Apparently Hunter Renfrow has been looking really good at camp too. Just saying, Panthers are going to surprise some people this year. Coming in at number three, we're on the same page. I'm gonna let you go with this one.
I actually changed mine because I didn't realize we made this more of a rankings than anything. So I'm gonna go, although this player you do have, I do have ranked now fifth. Ashton Jaunte is my third, is the one I'm ranked third most excited about. I am an absolute Ashton Jaunte stan. I was just talking to friend of the show, Cooper Velis, a real life Raiders fan, and just telling him like it's time. We're gonna buy the jersey, we're gonna do it now. We got to remember, like, as good as like he was and like the highlights were and like seeing the crazy numbers, he broke the single season rushing records for both yards and touchdowns, career rushing records for yards, 200 yard games and 100 yard games. Like, this guy is one of the best running backs the college game has ever seen, as well as the fact that he is now going to a team that Pete Carroll loves to run the ball. He's going to treat this man like the new beast mode, except he's going to honestly have a much better player profile in terms of like receiving, rushing, top end speed. Like, he will be broken. He will be absolutely broken. And I cannot wait. The Raiders are not going to be good. We all know that. But it's going to be similar with Saquon Barkley on like the 2019 Giants, or maybe 28, yeah, 2018 Giants, where we just saw like this really good elite talent playing on this like dog water team that wins like four or five games. And that's going to be awesome. I think he's totally gonna be in contention for Offensive Rookie of the Year. He absolutely should be. I think he's the betting odds at like plus 200 right now. He's incredible. He's incredible. Ashton Jaunte. I hope he's gonna die out there in Las Vegas. They're never gonna be that good, and I'm worried about it. And I hope he goes to a better team eventually. But you know, there's not many people who have more talent than him in this draft class, and maybe even in the NFL at all.
I agree with you, Jack. I think Ashton Jeanty has the potential to resurrect this Raiders franchise. I just really do think that they've been down bad for a while. Last couple of years have been rough. They bring in Tom Brady, they got Pete Carroll, they got Geno Smith. Brock Bowers is a stud. So in my eyes, I'm like, it's only up from here. And I think Jeanty has that home run ability, the same way you kind of mentioned about Saquon Barkley, that we just haven't seen. I mean, his running ability was very different than we've seen some of these out of these big time running backs over the past, let's just say, 5 to 10 years. And the two guys that really come to my mind is Bijan Robinson and Saquon Barkley. They were shifty, they were fast, they were elusive, they were just putting on the burners, see you later. Jeanty has that in him. But he's like, I'm gonna run over eight dudes and you're not gonna tackle me, and then I'm gonna go score. Like, it's insane how what he's able to do, size, speed, power, combo, everything. And everyone wants to talk about, oh, we saw what he did in the college football playoff when he played Penn State. And I'm like, yeah, he didn't rush for 180 yards. He just had a normal game where it was like, what, like 80, 75, 80 yards. But I'm like, he went to Boise State, he was playing against Penn State and their dominant defensive line. I think he's going to transition just fine to the NFL. I'm so excited to watch him play. Definitely a guy that's probably going to win Rookie of the Year. He is the favorite right now. I think you were right. It's like plus 200 or 250, something like that. So the books love Jeanty. I love him as a prospect. I think he's going to have a great season. Coming at number four for me, this is just a guy that I feel like I have to talk about because of how good he's been playing at training camp. He looked great in the Hall of Fame game. He caught a touchdown. But it's Keandre Lambert-Smith, receiver that the Chargers drafted out of Auburn in, like, I think it was like the fourth or fifth round. And this guy has been an absolute stud. Everyone talking about Trey Harris coming out of Ole Miss being
He
that
did
guy.
nothing. He did nothing.
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 Nothing. And I think this guy has kind of almost overstepped Trey Harris in that maybe this is the guy that we should be talking about that's going to complement Ladd McConkey, that's going to be a target for Justin Herbert this season. I think the Chargers are going to be, I think they're going to be mid again. Honestly, their defense sucks. Their defense is really bad. And there's nothing, I just don't believe Justin Herbert's going to go out there and score like 35 points a game and they're going to win. I just don't believe that because they're going to want to run the football.
How could you say the defense is bad? They were one of the best run defenses in the NFL last year. Their defense was really good.
I don't think they're going to be much. I don't think they're going to be good this year. I worry about their secondary. I don't think in that division where you're dealing with Pat Mahomes, Bo Nix, and Geno Smith now, I think that secondary gets torched. Maybe who's their best cornerback on the Chargers?
Cornerback,
Who's their best secondary
Derwin
player?
James,
Because who?
Derwin James, Derwin James.
Okay, yeah, he's old, but he's also playing like a hybrid linebacker now. I'm just
He's
saying,
not
I just.
old. He's not even 30. They got Khalil Mack still. Yeah, in terms of these corners, yeah, I mean, Dante Jackson's okay. Dante Jackson's an okay player.
Woo! Woo! Sound the alarms,
They
guys.
were one of the
Dante
best run
Jackson to the
defenses in the
rescue.
NFL. They're one of the best run defenses in the NFL. It's
Congrats, run defense, whatever. I just don't think they're going to be able to stop teams from throwing the football up and down on them. I just don't. That's just my take. I don't think they have a great secondary. Justin Herbert, we know, can't win shootouts because he just doesn't do it. Everyone, I'm so tired. Justin Herbert's a great quarterback, extremely talented, but oh my gosh, we got to stop talking about this guy like he's the next best thing when he hasn't won a playoff game and he's been to two. He's in the playoffs twice or three times, and he hasn't won a playoff game. And everyone's like, "Oh my God, Justin Herbert!" On their hands and knees, saying that he's the best, next best thing. I'm like, dude, he's what, in his fifth or sixth year now? How much longer are we going to keep talking about this? You know what I'm saying? Like,
the
I'm
weapons on
kind of
this team
tired
are
of this of Herbert narrative when he hasn't won anything.
the weapons on this team are really lacking now that I'm looking at it. I hope they need Omarion Hampton to be really good. They need Omarion Hampton to be like a really good running back because their O-line could be solid with some of their new additions, specifically Mekhi Becton. Zion Johnson could take a year step forward. They got two good tackles in Joe Alt, Rashawn Slater. But yeah, right now, like Najee Harris, Quentin Johnston, Trey Harris, Will Dissly, that's not looking good. Ladd McConkey was good. You lucked out on him being good. That's a good thing. But a lot of these guys, yeah, I agree. Justin Herbert is a good player. I defend him a lot. I think he gets certain degrees of unnecessary hate, but like, yeah, maybe I think this the way the Chargers are good this year is if they're a Jim Harbaugh, really good defense, really good pass rush, run the ball 3 yards in the cloud of dust team. And then they could do what they did last year. Because I think, honestly, some of the stuff, it was honestly worse last year. A lot of the stuff looked worse. Like, they did not have as good as an O-line. Like, their weapons were even nastier because we didn't even know if Ladd McConkey was good or not. And Najee Harris, that doesn't really move anything for me, but they got Omarion Hampton. So that's good.
I don't know. I just think this they're going to need someone to step up, and I think Keandre Lambert-Smith is going to be that guy. Wish I would have had him in my dynasty league, but I didn't. I didn't get to the waiver wire quick enough, but that's my number four. Who do you got?
I got Will Campbell. I'm ready for the Campbell train. I think this is the year the Pats are like pretty okay, and I think it starts off with the fact that Will Campbell, well, probably not being like, I think there will be times, especially in like primetime games, which I know the interestingly enough, I'm going to the primetime game where the Patriots play the Giants on Monday Night Football. I think that'll be a really big test for Will Campbell. But I think that there will be times where he gets got on live TV and people think he's bad. But the addition that Will Campbell will give to this Patriots team of like being like a rock solid, hopefully franchise tackle will be massive. And I think he will have a massive like football offensive line equivalent of wins above replacement for this team. I think he's got excellent feet. I think he's got great strength. Maybe he's not going to be like a mover in terms of the run game, like right off the bat. But like, I think at least in terms of pass blocking, he is going to give Drake May, who is also one of my rising underrated guys. I think the Pats are going to be good this year. I think the Patriots could really like turn it around to be good. They got a lot of dudes that I think are interesting, including the Eastern Washington all-time receiving leader who beat all of Cooper Kupp's record, who they got in the undrafted free agency, who they gave the highest undrafted free agent contract to in NFL history, Efton Chisholm III. I really like that. I think they could be good. I think Will Campbell's going to be massive for them. Go Pats. Follow Gabe Pats on Instagram, anyone, if you're interested in that. GABE underscore Pats. He's got good stuff.
Coming in at number five, I got a Patriot, Travion Henderson. I think he was always the better running back coming out of Ohio State. What he can do in the passing game as a third down back,
And just the elusiveness that he brings. Also, too, he's a man of God. He's a man of faith. I like that in my running backs. Compared to Quinshon Judkins, who is should be in jail.
A woman abuser, yeah.
Yeah. Go Browns. Anyway, Travion Henderson, I think, is going to be a great addition to this Patriots offense. It's going to be super helpful for Drake May, no doubt about it. And I just think you give a guy like this an offensive line, and if Will Campbell's able to do something and you're able to give him the ball in space, the sky's the limit. I think he's going to be fantastic in the screen game, check downs here and there. But Travion Henderson, I think, has a potential to be a starter off rip. I know they have Ramondre Stevenson. Apparently, he dropped some weight. He's been looking good. I think they still have Antonio Gibson, but Travion Henderson, I think, by like week 5 or 6, if it's not right out of the gate, he's going to be the starting running back for this team.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I also like about the Patriots. It's like, I was down on Ramondre Stevenson last year. He ended up being better than I thought he'd be. And truly, I think that the fact that they have options with Antonio Gibson and Henderson, who I think Henderson's very good. I think he had a very similar player comp to Judkins almost exactly, which is why it just blew me away that anyone would choose the guy who has the more off the field issues than him. But besides the point, that's Andrew Berry. I think that their rushing game could be really good. And I think they upgraded because not their O-line didn't just get better with Will Campbell. They also got a lot of interior guys. And I think this could be the year that they get back to having like a pretty dominant offensive line in general. So I like the Pats. I like Henderson a lot. I think that you got a great list here. And yeah, we just got some other things to talk about.
We're going to do a little bit of baseball talk. I know we're usually heavy on the football, but I think we have to talk baseball considering the trade deadline just happened. And
Yeah.
someone some both of our teams made some really nice trades. So let's get a little bit let's talk about it. We got some winners and losers. Jack, I'm going to get you started. Who are your winners of the trade deadline?
I think the winners are relatively obvious. And a lot of people would include a team I'm not going to include. I'm going to put that team in its own separate category, and that's the Yankees. The Yankees are not winners. The Yankees are in the third thing that we don't completely understand yet. That's not really losers, but it's not really winners. The winners are the Mets, the Mariners, and the Astros. Whew, man, I can't even like let me say this right now. Let's go off rip. 2 weeks ago, Mariners dead in the water. They got swept by the average at best Yankees. Blew one of the biggest leads ever. And now I'm looking at that as like probably the best offense in the American League. Like Eugenio Suarez, we got some dudes on this team. Big Dumper's gonna be there. Like I'm super into the Mariners roster right now. I couldn't be more into it. Mets too, and the Astros landing Correa. I couldn't even be more ecstatic about that. I wanted Ryan Helsley personally, really badly for the Yankees. When the Yankees were talking about potentially getting him, I was like, all right, let's go all in on him. I knew a guy who was a big fan of his who was really upset about him leaving. But the fact that the Mets swooped in last second and got him, I was pretty upset. Then I was okay because of what the Yankees did, but that didn't really work out. So yeah, I'm feeling okay. I think someone needed to match the Suarez ransom, so to speak. I think every team probably called about him. Then that stuff with the hands happened, and he was like, ugh, like, is this guy even going to be able to play? But the Mariners did it, and they're trying to win now. They are playing like a team that really like wants to do this, and they're playing with their GM seems like he actually cares about doing this stuff for them. So I couldn't be happier with it. And I think one of the more underrated things is getting Gregory Soto for the Mets as well. I thought that was pretty huge for them.
I think for my winners, I think that there's really two big winners. I think it's without a doubt the Mets and the Mariners. I'll talk about the Astros in a second, but I think the two big winners were the Mets and the Mariners. I think adding Josh Naylor and Eugenio Suarez to a lineup that already mashes home runs was huge.
Oh my God, I totally forgot about Josh Naylor. That's a lot
Yeah.
of beef. That's a lot of beef in that on that team. Holy crap.
A lot of runs are going to be scored for that team. And you know what? I love it for them. I love that for the Mariners. I don't think they're going to catch the Astros. I know the Astros just got swept, but in my eyes, I 100% believe that the Mariners are going to make the playoffs. That is
Oh
a
my God. The Mariners also got Jeter Martinez. Do you remember him?
Jeter Martinez? No, that's not a person.
He was on, no, he was on the, he was a prospect and the Yankees had him for a long time. And I guess you didn't know about this because you weren't in the Yankees world. But they're like, oh my God, his name's Jeter. Isn't that awesome? Sorry, I just hadn't seen that name in like years.
Anyway, the Mariners, I think, are going to be good. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I just think adding the power bat, like you said, with the Rosarena, with Cal Riley, they got JP Crawford. He had a walk-off homer the other day. This is a team. Oh, sorry, Julio Rodriguez. Forgot to mention that guy. This is a very good lineup. This is a team that might be able to make a run in the playoffs. I just don't know if I trust their pitching outside of the two guys. They're two studs in Brian Wu and Logan Gilbert. George Kirby's got to pitch a little bit better. He pitched good his last time out, but if those three guys can stay healthy and pitch to the level we know they're capable at, the Mariners with this offense, they might be dangerous. Going into the Mets, I mean, the Mets just have now, I think, the best bullpen in all of baseball. No
Easily.
doubt, no doubt in my mind. I mean, you trade, you got Gregory Soto, you get Ryan Hensley. You also got Taylor Rogers from San Francisco. And sorry, you also have Edwin Diaz. You still have Ryan Stanek. You also still have, oh my goodness, why can't I think of his name right now? He's another right-handed pitcher for the Mets. I have to look this up. It's going to bother me if
Play
Mets.
home.
No, not Clay Holmes. They do have Clay Holmes. I've been hearing about that they're going to move him potentially to the bullpen. Oh, yeah, Reed Garrett. And I'm just looking at this team and I go, yeah, you have three options in the sixth inning. You got three options in the seventh, and you're going Hensley, Hellesley, and then Edwin Diaz in the ninth. And it's like, yeah, how are you going to stop this Mets bullpen? And they can play matchups because you now have, Soto, who also throws 98 miles an hour. So you got a hard throwing lefty. You have a right-handed submarine pitcher who no one can hit, who throws like a rise ball. I don't know how he's able to pitch, throw the ball, and make it move the way he does. And you have one of the best closers in all of baseball. Oh, sorry, not just one. You actually have two of the best closers in all of baseball after making that trade with the Cardinals. And I just, the Mets, they also got Cedric Mullins. I know he's been one of the worst hitters this
Yeah.
year. But you need a center fielder. You need a left-handed bat. He gets a little bit of spark going. That would be huge for this lineup because we already know they got Lindor. They got Soto. They got McNeil. They got Lindor. I mean, this is a team when they're on fire, they're tough to beat. And now you just got a bullpen that went from a good bullpen already to now a great and probably the best bullpen in all of baseball.
Yeah, I'll maintain that the Mets as a team, like, I still don't think this is their year. I don't think there's going to be any rings coming to Flushing, but they are making moves like they want to be, and they definitely will be a very dangerous team in this postseason. I think they are going to just go buckshot through this NL. And frankly, like the way you said it, like it's hard to disagree. Like the offensive production is there, and now I would say you're absolutely right. This is like the best bullpen in all of baseball. You know, like in terms of like the lineups that they could set up people up in, I don't really see like a lot of ways unless they just, you know, lose the entire situation and like play to their lowest possible ability, especially on the offensive side. I don't see how teams are necessarily beating them. So I couldn't agree more. Loser.
I think
Oh,
I no,
yes.
I was going to say the same thing. Let's get into the losers. I think the biggest loser had to have been it has to be the Angels. And the reason why I'm saying the Angels is because this is a team who is like 500, sub 500 every year come July, and they like make stupid moves to try and like be relevant, like it's going to matter when it's like no. Sell these, get trade your guys and restart a little bit. Like you have old Mike Trout, and that's it. And Joe Adell, he's played pretty well. Zach Neto, like some of these other
Would
guys
you have,
don't.
Tomas, would you have traded Mike Trout?
I don't think, no, I wouldn't have traded Mike Trout. You couldn't trade, the Angels can't trade Mike Trout. Like they just can't.
A
But
lot of
they had
people were saying,
guys,
though. A lot of
they
people
had.
were banging that drum, and I thought that was kind of silly. It's like at this point, you know, like the team is like lacking more, and I don't know what like a lot of people would even be willing to shell out, especially at this point with him.
I just think they have pitchers they could have traded. They could have traded Taylor Ward. They could have tried and changed, maybe traded Logan Ohapi potentially. I mean, there's guys they could have moved, and it would have made more sense to just say, oh, let me sell a little bit and, whatever. Also, too, Ron Washington's their manager, and he's been like not there all since he got like sick or something, and he's not. It's just the
Yeah.
Angels are so dysfunctional, and it's like, why are you trying to go all in? You don't even have your actual manager here. Like, come on. Like, just common
About
sense. Common sense. Common sense. They're
they
paying
got
Anthony.
Oswald.
They're paying, yeah, they got
Yeah.
Oswaldo Perez, Peraza, whatever his name is. Why?
Goat legend. Yankees legend Oswald Peraza. Like, come on.
I'm so, the Angels are just such, they're just an inept organization. The second loser for me is the Padres. I know they got Mason
Ooh.
Miller, and I understand
Ooh,
they
you
made
think
a lot
so?
of these big time trades. They got Laureano, they got O'Hearn, they got Mason Miller, but
They got JP Sears.
okay. But the prospects they gave up to make this happen was insane. They traded, I forget, I saw it, like they
It was
traded.
first, second, third, fourth, sixth, seventh, like, and then like it
They
goes all the way
traded
down to
like eight of their
27.
top 10 prospects, and they traded a top 10 prospect in all of baseball, and that hasn't been done in, I forgot the, I forgot what was, like, it is unheard of to trade a prospect like that at 18 years old, and mind you, an 18-year-old shortstop who apparently is going to be an absolute dog
Oh
for
my
Mason
God,
Miller, who's a closer.
Tomas, you know who they also picked up?
Who?
Nestor Cortez.
They did pick up Nestor Cortez. I forgot
I
about
can't
that.
believe we didn't lead the whole episode with the Padres getting Nestor Cortez.
Either way, it's just like you can't trade your future and go all in when you play in that division, which is really tough as it is, and you're not a top five team in baseball right now. If they were a top five team in baseball and they did all this, I'd be like, all right, we're going all in. But to trade the prospects they did for the return, like, I understand Ramon Laureano and Ryan O'Hearn have been playing great this year, but it's Ramon Laureano, who's like 34 or like 32, he's old, and Ryan O'Hearn, who's having his best season ever. You traded for two guys who are having good seasons, and you gave up some of your best prospects. And I just don't understand that. Mason Miller, I get it. He throws 102, but you have Robert Suarez.
He's insane. He's insane.
He
I
was
think
a.
they the Padres are going to be an insanely good team in this offseason, in this postseason too.
He's just. He's an all-star closer the past couple years. And you're like. And they have Adrian Morahan, who was an all-star this year, left-handed pitcher. They have a good set of relievers. And it's like, you went to go get another reliever and you gave up your best prospect in baseball. I know he throws 102 miles an hour, but he's a closer. It just doesn't make sense. I just feel like those are the moves you make when you get a all-star caliber shortstop or an outfielder or a left-handed bat, not a closer. You're
Yeah.
not, I'm not trading my best prospect in
Strengthening a
baseball.
strength.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. And the last loser I have is the Red Sox. I mean, the Red Sox are just, gosh, someone's got to just push Craig Breslow off a cliff, dude. Like, oh my goodness gracious. Like, they've came out and said that GMs don't like trading with him. He's the problem. And also, too, it's like, how do you go from Joe Ryan to Dustin May after 2 days before the trade deadline? You watched your team shell Dustin May. And you're like, yeah, I'm
Yeah.
gonna trade for that guy who, oh yeah, not, let's, he's gonna be a free agent after this year. So you just traded your 10th. They traded James Tibbs, who's like they're a really good prospect. He's gonna play first base. He's gonna be a first baseman, and they traded him. And I was like, you, why did you make that trade for Dustin May, who's a rental? You gave up a top 10 prospect for Dustin May, who is gonna probably leave after this year, because they're not gonna fork up the money. They're not gonna fork up the money. We saw what happened. They're just not. And it's just, I don't understand why they did that when they had an opportunity to go all in, go get Joe Ryan, go get another starting pitcher, because they can hit. That lineup is dangerous when they're healthy. But it's like, come on, make a move. Go all in. Do something that's not safe. It's like everything they do is like, this is the safe move, or this is okay. But it's just stupid moves because they won't pull the trigger on something big. And that's why the Red Sox are the losers to me.
I think the Red Sox hadn't even like I would disagree with how bad you think the Padres were. I think it was fine. I think there's a lot of mistakes in it, but To compare the Padres and the Red Sox deadlines is like night and day to me. This Red Sox organization under Craig Breslow, my God. Like the fact that this needs to, we have to consider this in totality with the Devers trade. And even though the Devers trade, like, you know, the Giants have been garbage. They have single-handedly gone from, you know, thinking about trading, getting some pieces for their own run to selling everything in the span of like 3 weeks. It still doesn't make sense for the for them to do that just because what he won't play first base and he felt a little disrespected in the organization. Maybe it's a two-way street in terms of ruining this relationship, guys. But besides that, the Dustin May thing, yeah, you're completely 100% right, Tomas, about the fact that they shell this guy and then get him. Where at least like when a team like the Yankees get Jose Caballero, he like played pretty solid against us in that series. You know, at least there's some thought for the people who have been watching every game to be like, oh, that guy on the other team who was like kind of okay, who like got a hit and stole a base against us. Yeah, we got him now. Isn't that cool? And instead, it's the opposite. It's like, well, with this lacking lineup, although it has a lot of potential, we just shelled this dude for everything. It's insane. And I'll end this with are you aware of the Craig Breslow quote that kind of encompasses this whole deadline for them?
Hit me. Hit me with a quote.
He goes, this in no way signifies a waving of the white flag on 2025. We are as committed as we were 6 months ago to putting a winning team on the field. And then he goes, I understand the frustration and disappointment. There's not a lot of sympathy for how hard we tried to get deals across the line. There it is, Red Sox fans. And it brings me, honestly, like, this is kind of the happiest I've been this whole show, to be honest, outside of the Giants stuff, because I love talking about how inept that organization and the Fenway Sports Group is. Because guys, just give him some sympathy, okay? The multi-billionaire wants sympathy, all right? Who cares he didn't do his job? Feel bad for him, and that's the BTB motto. Feel bad for the billionaires. That's all I got to say about the Red Sox. They're awful. Worse than the Angels. At least the Angels, people were talking about the Red Sox going to the playoffs at one point. The Angels are just a failing organization in like a weird suburb of LA. I worst trade deadline I could possibly imagine.
That's pretty much all I got on the baseball thing. I feel like that was worth mentioning. We had to talk baseball. I do want to say the last thing, the Astros getting Carlos Correa, huge. Absolutely huge. I don't want to spend most of the time or spend the rest of this talking about the Astros, but that's a team that could definitely win the World Series this year. I'm excited to watch that team. Correa's back. He's at third base. I'm loving it. But for all our listeners, just know it's football time. And when it's football time, it's bad takes in Boston time. All right. Me and Jack, we're going to be here every week. We're going to have our set schedule. We're going to let everyone know when these episodes will be dropping. We'll have some episodes coming out over these next couple of weeks. We'll break down some training camp. We'll focus on some teams specifically, go through the divisions, AFC, NFC, you name it. If there's anything else you guys want to hear from us, you know how to reach us. You got anything for the people, Jack?
No, Yankees are an inept organization. I hate everyone who runs anything. We're not going to be good, and it makes me really sad. Everyone who listens to this pod, we love you from the bottom of our hearts. You're great people. We're going to put on a good product for you this off season. We like to think we always did, but this is going to be the best version of us possible. We're going to be at this consistent time, a consistent day of the week. We're going to do a lot of interesting things. We're going to involve a lot more fan involvement. We're going to have people calling on to the show. We're going to do a lot of exciting stuff. So if you believe in this product and you don't believe that we should like get this mic violently taken away from our mouths as quickly as possible, then tell a friend, tell them to get into this. You know, I got buddies who make music. I try to listen to all their music. Tell a friend, just be like, listen to Bad Takes in Boston. Let's be clear. Is this any different than anything you hear on the radio? Maybe a little bit lower budget, maybe a little more you know, informal, but I think that's what makes it okay. I think that's what makes it genuine. This is our going to be potentially, I would say probably, our last show before being in Boston. Are you correct about that, Tomas?
Yeah, I would say this is going to be our last show before we start going in person going forward. We wanted to drop this because just a lot of stuff's been going on. Next couple weeks, we're both going to be busy with a lot of different things. But once we get back to Boston, we're back in the same room. We're going to get a lot of consistency. We wanted to feed the people something, get them excited about season two. Just know we're Bad Takes in Boston, and we're coming for you.